Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Dilvish the Damned by Roger Zelazny. Narrated by Eric Michael Summerer. Passage to Dilfar. When Dilvish the Damned came down from Porteroy, they tried to stop him at Karan, and again at Tugado, then again at Maystar, Mykar, and Bildesh. Five horsemen had waited for him along the route to Dilfar, and when one flagged, a new rider with a fresh horse would replace him. But none could keep the pace of Black, the horse out of steel, for whom it was said the Colonel of the East had bartered a part of his soul. A day and a night had he ridden, to outpace the advancing armies of Lailish, Colonel of the West, for his own men lay stiff and clotted on the rolling fields of Porteroy. When Dilvish had seen that he was the last man standing in the place of slaughter, he had called Black to his side, hauled himself into the saddle that was a part of him, and cried for an escape. Black's gleaming hooves had borne him through a line of pikemen, their staffs turned aside like wheat, and ringing as their metal tips touched against his midnight hide. "To Dilfar!" he had cried, and Black turned at a right angle in his course and carried him up the face of a cliff where only goats can go. When Dilvish came by Karan, Black turned his head and said to him, "Great Colonel of the East, they have mined the air and the air beneath the air with the stars of death."
"Can you get by them?" asked Dilvish.
"If we go by way of the posting road," said Black, "I may be able to."
"Then let us make haste to try it."
The tiny silver eyes, which looked out from the space beneath space and contained the hell specks of star stuff, blinked and shimmered ahead. They turned off the road. It was on the posting road that the first rider emerged from behind a boulder and called upon Dilvish to halt. His horse was a huge bay without trappings.
"Draw rein, Colonel of the East," he had said. "Thy men are slaughtered. The road ahead is seeded with death and flanked by the men of Lailish."
But Dilvish had swept past him without making answer, and the man put his spurs to the bay and followed. He paced him all that morning, up the road to Tugado, until the bay, who was all a lather, stumbled and hurled the man to the rocks. At Tugado, Dilvish found his way blocked by the rider of the blood-red stallion, who fired at him a bolt from a crossbow. Black reared high into the air, and the bolt glanced off his chest. His nostrils grew, with a sound like the cry of a great bird coming forth from them. The blood-red stallion leapt from the roadway then, and into the field. Black plunged ahead, and the other rider turned his horse and followed. Till the sun reached the top of the sky did he give chase, and then the red horse collapsed in a heap of heavy breathing. Dilvish rode on. At Maystar the way was blocked at the pass of Reshth. A wall of logs filled the narrow trail to twice the height of a man.
"Over," said Dilvish,
and Black arced into the air like a dark rainbow, going up and across the fortification. Just ahead, at the ending of the pass, the rider of the white mare waited. Black cried out once more, but the mare stood steady. The light reflected from the mirrors of his steel hooves, and his hairless hide was near blue in the bright light of noonday. He did not slow his pace, and the rider of the mare, seeing that he was all of metal, backed from out the pass and drew his sword. Dilvish pulled his own blade from beneath his cloak and parried a head cut as he passed the other rider. Then the man was following after him and crying out,
"Though you have passed the stars of death and leapt the barrier here, you shall never make it to Dilfar. Draw rein! You ride a nether spirit who has taken the form of a horse, but you will be stopped at Mykar or Bildesh or before."
But the Colonel of the East did not reply, and Black carried him on with long, effortless strides.
"You ride a mount which never tires," called out the man. "But he is not proof against other sorceries. Give me your sword."
Dilvish laughed, and his cloak was a wing in the wind. Before the day lapsed into evening, the mare, too, had fallen, and Dilvish was near Mykar. Black halted suddenly as they approached the stream called Keth. Dilvish clung to his neck to keep from being thrown off.
"The bridge is out," said Black, "and I cannot swim."
"Can you clear it?"
"I do not know, my colonel. It is wide. If I cannot clear it, we will never surface again. Keth cuts deeply into the earth.
And the ambushers came suddenly forth from the trees then, some on horseback and others on foot, the foot soldiers bearing pikes. And Dilvish said,
"Try."
Black was immediately at full gallop, going faster than horses can run, and the world spun and tumbled about Dilvish as he clung to Black with his knees and his great scarred hands. He cried out as they rose into the air. When they struck the other bank, Black's hooves sank a full span into the rock, and Dilvish reeled in the saddle. He kept his mount, however, and Black freed his hooves. Looking back at the other bank, Dilvish saw the ambushers standing still, staring at him, then looking down into Keth, then back up again at him and Black. As they moved ahead once more, the rider of the piebald stallion fell in beside him and said,
"Though you have ridden 3 horses into the ground, we will stop you between here and Bildesh. Surrender!"
Then Dilvish and Black were far ahead of him and away. "They think you are a demon, my mount," he said to Black. The horse chuckled.
"Perhaps 'twere better an I were."
And they rode the sun out of the sky, and finally the piebald fell, and the rider cursed Dilvish and Black, and they rode on. The trees began to fall at Bildesh.
"Deadfalls!"
cried Dilvish. But Black was already doing his dance of avoidance and passage. He halted, rearing, and he sprang forward from off his hind legs and passed over a falling log. He halted again and did it once more. Then 2 fell at once from opposite sides of the trail, and he leapt backward and then forward again, passing over both. 2 deep pits did he leap across then, and a volley of arrows chattered against his sides, one of them wounding Dilvish in the thigh. The 5th horseman bore down upon them. The color of fresh minted gold was this horse, and named Sunset, and his rider was but a youth and light in the saddle, chosen so as to carry the pursuit as far as necessary. He bore a death lance that shattered against Black's shoulder without causing him to turn. He raced after Dilvish and called out,
"Long have I admired Dilvish, Colonel of the East, so that I do not desire to see him dead. Pray surrender unto me. You will be treated with all courtesies due your station."
Dilvish did laugh then and made reply, saying, "Nay, my lad, better to die than fall to Lailish. On, Black!" And Black doubled his pace, and the boy leaned far forward over Sunset's neck and gave chase. He wore a sword at his side, but he never had chance to use it. Though Sunset ran the entire night, longer and farther than any of the other pursuers, he too finally fell as the east began to grow pale. As he lay there, trying to rise, the youth cried out,
"Though you have escaped me, you shall fall to the lance."
Then was Dilvish, called the Damned, riding alone in the hills above Dilfar, bearing his message to that city. And though he rode the horse of steel, called Black, still did he fear an encounter with Lance of the invincible armor before he delivered his message. As he started on the last downward trail, his way was blocked a final time by an armored man on an armored horse. The man held the way completely, and though he was visored, Dilvish knew from his devices that he was Lance, the right hand of the Colonel of the West.
"Halt and draw rein, Dilvish," he called out. "You cannot pass me."
Lance sat like a statue. Dilvish halted Black and waited.
"I call upon you to surrender now."
"No,"
said Dilvish.
"Then must I slay you?"
Dilvish drew his sword. The other man laughed.
"Know you not that my armor is unbreachable?"
"No,"
said Dilvish.
"Very well, then," he said, with something like a chuckle. "We are alone here. You have my word. Dismount. I'll do so at the same time. When you see it is futile, you may have your life. You are my prisoner."
They dismounted.
"You are wounded," said Lance.
Dilvish cut for his neck without replying, hoping to burst the joint. It held, however, and the metal bore not even a scratch to tell of the mighty blow that might have beheaded another.
You must see now that my armor cannot be breached. It was forged by the salamanders themselves and bathed in the blood of 10 virgins.
Dilvish cut at his head, and as he had cut at him, Dilvish had circled slowly to his left, so that now Lance stood with his back to the horse of steel, called Black.
"Now, Black!" cried Dilvish.
Then did Black rear high up on his hind legs and fall forward, bringing his front hooves down toward Lance. The man called Lance turned rapidly around, and they struck him on the chest. He fell. 2 shining hoof marks had been imprinted upon his breastplate.
"You were right," said Dilvish. "It is still unbreached."
Lance moaned again.
"And I could slay thee now, with a blade through the eye slit of thy visor. But I will not, as I did not down thee fairly. When you recover, tell Lailish that Dilfar will be ready for his coming. 'Twere better he withdraw."
"I'll have a sack for thy head when we take the city," said Lance.
"I'll kill thee on the plain before the city," said Dilvish, and he remounted Black and descended the trail, leaving him there on the ground.
And as they rode away, Black said to him,
"When you meet, strike at the marks of my hooves. The armor will yield there."
When he came into the city, Dilvish proceeded through the streets to the palace without speaking to those who clustered about him. He entered the palace and announced himself.
"I am Dilvish, Colonel of the East," he said, "and I am here to report that Porteroy has fallen and is in the hands of Lailish. The armies of the Colonel of the West move in this direction and should be here 2 days hence. Make haste to arm. Dilfar must not fall."
"Blow then the trumpets," ordered the king, starting from his throne. "And muster the warriors. We must prepare for battle."
And as the trumpets sounded, Dilvish drank him a glass of the good red wine of Dilfar, and as meats and loaves were brought to him, he wondered once again at the strength of Lance's armor, and he knew that he must try its invincibility once more.
Felin's Song.
Across the evening, on the other side of the hill, beneath a moon that was huge and golden, Thelind was singing. In the high ware-hall of Cair Devash, rung all around with pine trees and mirrored far below its cliffs in that silver river called Dinesh, Mildin could hear her daughter's voice and the words of her song.
"The men of Westrim are hardy, the men of Westrim bold, but Dilvish, who was damned, came back and made their blood run cold. When they hounded him from Porteroy to Dilfar in the east, he rode a thing he'd brought from hell, a black and steel beast. They could not cut nor turn his mount, the horse that men call Black, for the colonel gained much wisdom with the curse of Jellarak."
Mildin shuddered and fetched her shimmering werecloak, for she was mistress of the coven, and throwing it about her shoulders and clasping it at her neck with the smoky stone of the moon, she became as a silver-gray bird and passed out through the window and high above the Dinesh. She crossed over the hill to where Thelind stood, staring south. Coming to rest upon the lower limb of a nearby tree, she said through her bird throat,
"My child, stop your singing." "Mother, what is the matter?" asked Thelind. "Why are you come in swift form?"
And her eyes were full, for they followed the changing of the moon, and in her hair was the silver fire of the witches of the north. She was 17 and supple, and she loved singing.
"You have sung a name which must not be uttered, even here in the fastness of our keep," said Mildin. "Where did you learn that song?"
"From a thing in the cave," she answered, "where the river called Midnight makes a pool as it passes on its way underground."
"What was the thing in the cave?"
"He is gone by now," Thelind replied. "He was a dark traveler, one of the frog kind, I think, who rested there on his way to the Council of Beasts."
"Did he tell you the meaning of that song?" she asked.
"No, he said that it is come but recent, and it is of the wars in the south and the east."
"That is true," said Mildin.
"And the frog has no fear of croaking it, for he is of the dark kind, and is of no consequence to the mighty. But you, Thelind, you must be more wary.
all of those with power upon them, unless they be rash indeed, fear to mention that name which begins with J.
Why is that?
The silver-gray form fluttered to the ground. Then her mother was standing beside her, tall and pale under the moon. Her hair was braided and twisted high upon her head into a crown of the coven, as it is called.
Come with me now within my cloak, and we will go to the pool of the goddess, while the fingers of the moon still touch upon its surface, said Mildon, and you shall see something of which you have sung.
They descended the hill to the place where the rivulet, which begins high upon the hill at the spring, passes down with barely a ripple into their pool. Mildon knelt beside it in silence, and leaning forward, she breathed upon the surface of the water. Then she summoned Thalind to her side, and they stared downward.
Look now into the image of the moon reflected in the water, she told her. Look deeply. Listen. Long ago, she began, even as we reckon time, there was a house which was stricken from the peerage of the East because several generations had intermarried with the elf kind. Elfmen are tall and fair to look upon, quick in thought and action. And though their race is much older, men do not generally recognize the elf peerage. Pity. The last man of this particular house, bereft of his lands and his titles, turned his hand to many occupations, from the sea to the mountains, and finally he came into soldiery in those first wars with the West some several centuries ago. Then did he distinguish himself in the great Battle of Porteroy, delivering that city out of the hands of its enemies, so that he came to be called Dilvish the Deliverer. See, the picture comes now clear. It is the entry of Dilvish into Porteroy.
And Thalind stared into the pool where a picture had formed. Tall he was, and darker than the elf kind, with eyes that laughed and glowed with the pride of triumph. He was mounted on a brown stallion, and his armor, though dented and scratched, still glowed in the morning sun. He rode at the head of his troops, and the people of Porteroy stood at the sides of the roadway and cheered, and the women threw down flowers before him. When he came at last to the fountain in the square, he dismounted and drank the wine of victory. Then the elders gave speeches of thanks, and a great open banquet was laid out for their deliverers.
"He looks to be a good man," said Thalind. "But what a great sword he wears! It reaches down to the tops of his boots."
"Yes, a two-handed engine named that day Deliverer. And his boots, you will note, are of the green elvish leather, which men cannot buy, but which are sometimes given as a gift in sign of favor by the High Ones. And it is said that they leave no footprints. It is a pity that within a sennight of that feast which you see spread, Deliverer should be smashed, and Dilvish no longer among the living."
"But he still lives."
"Yes, again."
There was a turbulence within the pool, and another picture emerged. A dark hillside. A man, cloaked and hooded, within a faintly glowing circle. A girl, bound upon a stone altar. A blade in the man's right hand, and a staff in his left. Mildon felt her daughter's fingers seize upon her shoulder.
"Mother, what is it?"
"It is the one you must never name."
"What is he about?"
"A dark thing, requiring the lifeblood of a virgin. He has waited since beyond time for the stars to reform themselves into the proper positions for this rite. He has journeyed far to come to that ancient altar in the hills above Porteroy, to the place where the thing must be accomplished. See how the dark things dance about the circle. Bats and wraiths and wandering wisps, craving but a drop. They will not touch the circle, though. Of course not, now, as the flames of that single brazier reach higher and the stars come into the correct position. He prepares to take her life."
"I cannot watch."
"Watch!
It is the Deliverer, Dilvish, coming that way."
"Yes. After the manner of the High Ones, he seldom sleeps. He goes to take his air in the hills above Porteroy, wearing his full battle trappings as people expect of deliverers.
He sees Jell. He sees the circle. He advances.
Yes, and he breaks the circle. Being of the high blood, he knows he has 10 times the immunity of a man to sorcery. But he does not know whose circle he has broken. Still, it does not kill him. Yet he is weakened. See how he staggers. So great is the power of that one.
He strikes the wizard with his hand, knocking him to the ground, and he upsets the brazier. Then he turns to free the girl.
Within the pool, the shadow that was the sorcerer rose from off the ground. His face was invisible within the hood, but he lifted his staff on high. Suddenly, he seemed to grow to an enormous height, and his staff lengthened and twisted like a serpent. He reached out and touched the girl, lightly, with its tip. Thalind screamed. Before her eyes, the girl was aging. Wrinkles appeared on her face, and her hair grew white. Her skin yellowed, and her every bone grew prominent beneath it. Finally, she stopped breathing, but the spell did not cease. The thing on the altar shriveled, and a fine powder, like smoke, arose from it. Then a skeleton lay upon the stone. Dilvish turned upon the sorcerer, raising Deliverer above his shoulder. But as he brought the blade down, the Dark One touched it with his staff, and it shattered and fell at his feet. Then Dilvish advanced 1 step upon the sorcerer. Again the staff licked forward, and a nimbus of pale fire played about the form of the Deliverer. After a time it subsided. Still, though, did he stand there, unmoving. The picture vanished.
"What has happened?"
"The Dark One," said Mildon, "wrought him a terrible curse, against which even the high blood was not proof. Look now." Day lay upon the hillside. The skeleton lay upon the altar. The sorcerer was gone. Dilvish stood alone, all marble in the sunfall, with the dew of morning upon him, and his right hand was still raised as if to smite an enemy. Later, a group of boys came by and stared for a long while. Then they ran back to the town to tell of it. The elders of Porteroy came up into the hills, and taking the statue as a gift of the many strange ones who were accounted friends of their deliverer, they had it carted back to Porteroy and set up in the square beside the fountain.
"He turned him to stone!"
"Yes, and he stood there in the square for over 2 centuries, his own monument, fist raised against the enemies of the town he had delivered. None ever knew what had become of him, but his human friends grew old and died, and still his statue stood."
"And he slept in stone?"
"No. The Dark One does not curse that kindly. While his body stood rigid in full battle trappings, his spirit was banished to one of the deepest pits of hell the Dark One could manage."
"Oh."
"And whether the spell was meant only to be so, or whether the high blood prevailed in a time of need, or whether some powerful ally of Dilvish's learned the truth and finally worked his release, no one knows. But one day recent, as Lailish, Colonel of the West, swept across the land, all the men of Porteroy were assembled in the square, preparing defense of the town." The moon had now crept to the edge of the pool. Beneath it, there came another picture. The men of Porteroy were arming themselves and drilling in the square. They were too few, but they seemed intent upon selling their lives as dearly as possible. Many looked upon the statue of the Deliverer that morning, as though recalling a legend. Then, as the sun wrapped it in color, it moved. For a quarter of an hour, slowly and with apparent great effort, the limbs changed position. The entire crowd in the square stood and watched, itself unmoving now. Finally, Dilvish climbed down from his pedestal and drank from the fountain. The people were all around him then, and he turned toward them.
"His eyes, mother, they have changed."
"After what he has seen with the eyes of his spirit, is it a wonder that the outer ones reflect it?" The picture vanished. The moon swam farther away. "And from somewhere he got him a horse that was not a horse, but a beast of steel in the likeness of a horse." For a moment,
A dark and running form appeared within the pool.
"That is Black, his mount."
Dilvish rode him into the battle, and though he fought long on foot, too, he rode him out again, much later, the only survivor. In the weeks before the battle, he had trained his men well, but they were too few. He was named Colonel of the East by them, in opposition to the title Lord Lylish wears. All fell, however, save he, though the lords and elders of the other cities of the East have now risen in arms, and they, too, recognize his rank. This very day, I have been told, he stood before the walls of Dilfar and slew Lance of the Invincible Armor in single combat. But the moon falls now, and the water darkens.
But the name! Why must I not mention the name of Jellarak?
As she spoke it, there came a rustling sound, as of great dry wings beating at the air overhead, and the moon was obscured by a cloud, and a dark shape was reflected deep within the pool. Mildin drew her daughter within the werecloak. The rustling grew louder, and a faint mist sprang up about them. Mildin made the sign of the moon, and she began to speak softly.
"Back with thee. In the name of the coven, of which I am mistress, I charge thee return. Go back where thou earnest. We desire not thy dark wings above Kaer Devash."
There was a downdraft of air, and a flat, expressionless face hovered just above them, crouched between wide bat wings. Its talons were faintly glowing, red as of metal just heated at the forge. It circled them, and Mildin drew the cloak tighter and raised her hand.
"By the moon, our mother, in all her guises, I charge thee depart. Now, this instant, get away from Kaer Devash."
It landed upon the ground beside them, but Mildin's cloak began to glow, and the stone of the moon blazed like a milky flame. It drew back from the light, back within the mists. Then an opening appeared in the cloud, and a shaft of moonlight passed through it. A single moonbeam touched upon the creature. It screamed once, like a man in great pain, then mounted into the air, heading southwest. Thalind looked up into her mother's face, which suddenly appeared very tired, older.
"What was it?"
she asked her.
"It was a servant of the Dark One. I tried to warn you, in the most graphic way possible, of his power. For so long has his name been used in the conjuring and compelling of fell spirits and dark wights that his has become a name of power. They rush to find the speaker whenever they hear it uttered, lest it should be he, and he should grow angry at their tardiness. If it is not he, they often seek vengeance upon the presumptuous speaker. It is also said, though, that if his name be pronounced too often by one person, then he himself becomes aware of this and sends a doom upon that person. Either way, it is not wise to go about singing such songs."
"I will not, ever. How can a sorcerer be that strong?"
"He is as old as the hills.
He was once a white wizard, and he fell into dark ways, which makes him particularly malicious. You know, they seldom ever change for the better. And he is now accounted to be one of the three most powerful, possibly the most powerful, of all the wizards in all the kingdoms of all the earths. He is still alive and very strong, though the story which you saw took place centuries ago. But even he is not without his problems."
"Why is that?"
asked the witch's daughter. "Because Dilvish is come alive once more, and I believe he is somewhat angry." The moon emerged from behind the cloud, and huge it was, and it had turned to fallow gold during its absence. Mildin and her daughter headed back up the hill then, toward Kaer Devash, rung round with pines, high above Dinesh, the Silver River. The Bells of Shordan. No living thing dwelled in the land of Rahorengast. Since an age before this age had the dead realm been empty of sound, save for the crashing of thunders and the spit-spit of raindrops ricocheting from off its stonework and the stones. The towers of the citadel of Rahoring still stood, The great archway from which the gates had been stricken continued to gape like a mouth frozen.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?